Blog Talk Radio.
Sitting here anxious to talk about one of my heroes, this Edgar Cayce guy.
Okay.
When I say hero, it's just that he, his work helped me to discover more of these cosmic laws and how to use the energies that we do have. And
yeah,
was always as the sleeping prophet. So when we discussed who we might work with this week, the thought of Edgar Cayce came to mind because he's reading some of his work at a very early age helped me design the way I speak and how I.
Right. When you read his book, you're only what in the seventh and you're in seventh grade.
Right. What had
you're
happened?
Seventh grade, and yeah, that's quite an informative year when you come across something like that. What was the name of the book that you read?
All right, it was called The Sleeping Prophet, and
uh-huh.
It was by Jess Stern, who was his grandson.
Uh-huh.
And I was issued a locker that didn't work, so I was reissued a locker. And when I went to
you found it in there, yeah.
I opened it up, and there was this book in there, and it said The Sleeping Prophet. By Jess Stern, and it was about this gentleman named Edgar Cayce, who was the greatest, I guess, 20th century prophet,
seer.
You know,
yeah.
Going back, we're not talking about Nostradamus and the great ones of the past, but a modern, let's say, and reading
right.
His work, especially on the healings, you know, because he had x-ray vision. He not only
yeah.
did great work as far as predictions for now times and what was going
right.
on in the collective consciousness of his time. But the thing that got me with Edgar Cayce is the fact that when he did his readings, when he described what he was experiencing, he would lay down on a couch, he would loosen his shoelaces, unbutton his collar, things like this, and he always had with him this very wonderful stenographer whose name was Gladys Davis, and she stayed throughout his life, and she wrote down every single word he uttered. In fact, he's got one of the biggest libraries over in Virginia Beach there at the foundation, the Edgar Cayce Foundation in Virginia. I forgot the real name for it, but ARE, there you go. But they have over 14,300 readings that he's done in 43 years. But the key that I was getting at is that he got this information while he was in a sleep state, and it was an induced hypnotic state. What had happened is in the course of his year, when he was about 29 years old, he had a very bad case of laryngitis, and he couldn't speak, and he used to do readings before that, and it was very troublesome for him. And he went to what we would call nowadays a nutritionist, but that's what they had then. And this gentleman said to him, Dr. Hall, I think his name was, if I can remember, at any rate, this nutritionist or this doctor at the time, Dr. Al Lane, that was his name, he told him, try some self-induced hypnosis. He already knew he was different than other people through his childhood and things like that, because people told him that, and he just that. So his very first real healing happened when this doctor said, try some self-induced hypnosis. And this idea of hypnosis was that he was to bring himself deep inside himself and kind of fall asleep. And what had happened was all of a sudden words came out of his mouth. Now, he wasn't able to speak for over a year. His vocal cords were paralyzed, so he took up photography as a side job, let's say, because he wasn't doing the readings. They were all by volunteer money, by the way. He never really took money for readings. So at any rate, the very first time he had this experience, that he went down and out. He was totally out, and his voice came back, and he was telling the people in the room what the problem with his throat was, or the severe laryngitis, but it was some sort of disease, and how to cure it. And from then on, every time he laid down or he closed his eyes or he went into a trance, he doesn't know what he says, he has no memory of it, but the key that really got me is, where does he go? Where is he getting this information? Because once he wakes up from self-induced state, whether the information is correct or incorrect, most of the time it's correct, but where do you go? Where does he go into his subconscious and this and that? So a lot of these questions come up when the people talk about past life experiences and how do you know? You know, so it's like reverse engineering. Reverse engineer a car, you reverse engineer a past life, something like that. But at any rate, it turns out that these questions were asked to him. He never remembered what he said. And then asking him in this state, when he was in this state, said, he would say that he goes to the Hall of Records or the Akashic Records. Both of these are known to be an area or a storage of arena, probably DNA of every life form. That's my thought, I'm saying. But
right.
he said, he never said he spoke to a spirit or an entity from another world. It was all self-hypnosis. And then when he went down, he again was guided to the Akashic Records. The only thing he would ask would be the person's name and where they lived. And that was basically mostly for the healing. He didn't call them healing. What did he call them? He had another word for it. Oh, he called them just health readings. Nowadays, we basically use healing, and we think of health as insurance or something. You know, it's done in a whole different level. But the idea of where do you go in this state of consciousness, and the fact that he really couldn't remember anything, it's pretty obvious that his system was set up in such a way that when he went into these deeper states of sleep or the subtler bodies of himself, he would perhaps leave his body, not consciously even being aware of it, following that energy force that brings him this, going to these records, saying what has to be said, and he just needed the name of the person, where the person lived, and also that's how he got the title, the Sleeping Prophet, is because the readings used to come when he put himself into a self-hypnosis degression, a lower vibration. And that's how we got his back, and that's how he started doing the readings over again. He had stopped for a while because a lot of questions would come through and a lot of greed came through, and he's not knowing what he's saying because he's really out, and whatever information people needed, he would give it to them. If they would ask for the, you know, gambling, who's going to win this and that, or the stock market. In fact, it's even recorded there. Someone had asked him about the stock market in the 20s over there, and he says, get your money out of the stocks, and all these are recorded. And the idea of that, I think you can, or I know that you can, I know I'm talking about Edgar Cayce himself, but what and the way that he went under in that subconscious has to do with the sleep state you have when you're awake as well. So now individuals may get answers in their dreams. What Edgar Cayce was doing was not dreams, or he wasn't like wandering off somewhere out there in the universe. He couldn't even remember what it was. That's why he had the stenographer all the time. But the idea that there's one universal place that everybody's thoughts, everything is all DNA and connected into the community mind or the world mind or things of that nature. Although he was called the prophet, he wasn't limited to the aspect of visions for like Atlantis and things of that nature. The idea of sleeping now, the whole idea of dreaming is not, again, what Edgar Casey did. He did self-hypnosis to bring himself down, but then he was so trained, as soon as he laid down, his eyes would start fluttering, he was gone, and a voice would come out, which would be his voice, but the information, if it was medical, it came out in a medical terminology. And
he was a medium, obviously, and he was channeling something. I don't know if this is, happens to you, but I found whenever I've done this for so many years that I know exactly when there's a, you know, something there, and it's like whenever I communicate with a certain entity or spirit that I see or hear, I immediately have to go up into another. I have to leave whatever I'm doing consciously and try to, it's kind of like my mind just accelerates to some different height.
The higher vibration. So the higher level or a different vibration.
Exactly. And then that higher vibration, suddenly I'm in direct communication with whoever that is that it wants to be on, who wants to communicate with me. And I feel that sense. But right after the communication has ended, whatever it is, I've always been able to write down my stuff. I always wrote down everything. It's just kind of like, you know, sweeps through you automatically, and you just handwrite it down as it comes, so you can validate that you did this, or what it was. But I found that after that, I would be almost exhausted. Suddenly, I mean, mentally exhausted. I would just, as I was finished, suddenly it was like you suddenly come down and down and down, you know, back to the third dimension, you know, back to, you know, where you were. And but there's always that sometimes I've absolutely fallen asleep after communication like that, because it just becomes, you know, exhaustive. You're exhausted at that level of vibration, I guess. But I always wondered, how does that happen to you? I mean, do you feel, I mean, after a reading, do you get tired?
I've had great exhilaration because of the outcome, or I'm in awe when I do the readings myself, because I don't know what's coming out, and I'm always in awe of it, of how spirit speaks or how what's going to show itself next to me. But do I get tired and exhausted? Sure, I do.
Yeah, I wonder, you feel that.
During the day. But even in the story of Edgar Casey here, he literally, when he got that laryngitis, and then he came back and he was helping everybody, he became so exhausted. But people were asking. He had to have his wife take the questions to clear any questions about any kind of profit that someone could make through the stocks or oil wells, and he would give these people these answers. But he started to get ill and exhausted. That's when, you know, he decided to actually not do the work anymore until, it may have been him or his father, there was a great fire, some explosion in the face, and Hewlin may have been even him who couldn't see, or one of the grandchildren couldn't see, and he came back into the work, and then he realized he was still very useful, because as he started to deteriorate and get exhausted. I'm talking about a man not doing thousands of readings. We're talking about 14,000 readings, and that's just the medical ones. He read for 43 years to help humanity, and was not a rich by any means. You know, everything was done by donations and aspects like that. But when you say get tired when you reach a certain level, yes, you need to prepare for all types of work that you do. It's like, you know, if you're going to run the marathon and you never did anything like that before, you're not going to get past the mile because you have
that. You always have to. That's exactly right. It's like when you do this, you're prepared for it. You know, you know. Okay, I'm going to be running a marathon today. Or I'm going to run a mile. I'm going to run 5 miles. But whatever it is, I'm going to connect, and that, and you expect that, and that's fine. But it's just the when you talked about the self-hypnosis, that's kind of pretty much what happens. It seems like that, but you know, you feel it coming on, and you feel that like you just opened a doorway or some sort,
very meditative,
even if you. Even if I'm doing something else, and I feel that sudden energy there, and waiting to say something, it could be who knows? I mean, it's people that people that are trying to contact you, or even your inner self, like your inner self pleading with you to wake up, and
wake up. The library of the mind. Come on, take a dip into the subconscious.
Exactly.
I know exactly what you're. In 1932, Edgar Cayce even said that he was doing a future reading, and he was talking between the years 1998 and 2015. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is because in that particular that particular reading, he said that during this time, our society would be transformed, was the word he used. He said, because it's the new fifth root race. And what is coming in the future are the super children, the advanced star children. Not even talking about genetically modified children from aliens or anything like that. Because he didn't talk about aliens, but he did say that the children coming in through these times will transform society. Now, he didn't say if he's going to transform it from good to bad or anything else, but the interesting thing is that China, I don't have a year or a date on this, which I apologize for. I tried to do some extra research on it, but I couldn't find, it was happened a long time ago, but what China did is they set out to find the super psychic children, and they wanted really to use them for the advancement of humanity and things like that. And at this time, they called them EHF, and it meant extra human functions. And they out of the children that they did, which I don't know how many they did do, but they came up with over 100,000 children that they started to call star children. Now, this was from China, so when we get the word star children, superhuman children is what Cayce said. So I looked a little further into it because this is the exact time that those vibrations, these kids are coming in with, like a new model, like a car that can park itself and talk to you and you can watch movies and we won't even need our hands soon to drive,
Yeah, you're right. No, you're right. You know, George called them the indigo children. Okay.
That's right, and there's also crystal children. There's several, and just like on any industry of balance, you're going to have some aspects of your yin yang with some children that come in that individuals have said described them as black eyed children. You know, they're from the negative side of. They're like Robotons, like robots that look like kids, but they're really alien. I mean, that's a thesis that's out there. But at any rate, this one commentator.
Oh, wait, this is from 1998? Was it 1998
till now? This is what Cayce said. Reading, and he did this in 1932. This reading came out. All right, so from 1998 to 2015, Our society would be transformed by this new fifth root race, and there would be advanced super children, is what he said. And China did this whole study, and they came up with a name calling them extra human functioning children. And they actually did a search, and one of those searches, there was a girl, a young girl, she was maybe 5-6 years old, with a palm open in her hand, she put a hand across a bush that had buds on it but had not yet blossomed. And when she put her hand across the whole shrub or bush or whatever, all the flowers by themselves blossomed. And this was witnessed by many, many people. This was one of the studies in China. And they had, I don't know what happened to these children. That's what I wanted to see, where they would be now or what's going on. But
when did this study begin in China?
That's what I don't have, but it came up in the reading from Edgar Cayce that he gave in 1932. So he gave this reading in 1932. He was talking about the future in 1998, and he mentioned in this process about the superhuman children that China, you know, and in China they will collect or something like these extra human.
Well, they did this. They did this in Russia, and they did this in this country as well. They were there because when they started to. When Russia had the advanced psychic division there, where they, you know, had all kinds of clairvoyance and remote viewing and so on, and
they were
doing this for years and years, and starting in the 60s, I believe 50s and 60s, but we started it in this country, and I'm sure China did, but you know I never heard of that, but I can believe that we're in a different that is so everybody since 1998 let's just say 98 till now it's 2008 they would be anybody born in 98 would be what 14 now.
I'm not good at math. You could do that.
it'd be about 16 years old. So anybody
in 1998.
Yeah, the kids would be 16 years old now. So
he gave the reading in 1932. Yeah, they would be young children. Yes, but I don't know I don't have enough research to lock that in because they didn't say how old these children were. It didn't say, you know,
they're anywhere from a year old to, if it's 98 to now or till next year, they're anywhere from a year old to 16 or 17 years old.
Right.
So that would be that's right in high school and all of your schools right now, all your elementary and secondary schools are children of that period.
And
you know,
you will some of them will develop it, some of them won't, but most of them will be recognized as either different.
Yeah,
or
yeah, yeah, yeah. That's amazing.
Change,
yeah.
You know, but getting. I don't want to get too far away from dreams or sleep or things of that nature.
Sure.
But he did.
Let's do that. Yeah, let's go. We can go into that.
Yeah, because during this time is when all of these, it seems that the prophets of the past and the prophets from Nostradamus to the ones of the past and Edgar Cayce all seem to talk, and the Mayans around the fifth root race around this time of turmoil and civil unrest and all of these things, that many people now, it's noted that sleep is necessary to build the subtle bodies, the astral bodies, to feed and nurture yourself when you are at rest. Now, a lot of people can't sleep nowadays because of what's going on and medications and all these different things. And sometimes when they have these dreams, it interrupts their sleep, or they don't really get the full sleep they need. So in the aspect of your collective consciousness, when you go through the day and you have this peripheral vision, like you're walking down the street, but you're really looking at that cute little dog on the end of the leash up the block, and you're watching this little dog on this walk. But meanwhile, your subconscious, and including your conscious mind, is collecting all the information of the walk, the trees you walk past, the stop sign, the neighbor that smiled, the color of the car. And these are things that you're not normally going to want to hold on to because at the moment they have no value to you. You're looking at something else. But very subconsciously and very subtly, these other things get drawn into your body. Now, sleep time comes, all right? You're laying down, you want to rest, you want to go to sleep, and you could fall into a sleep, and then underneath in the subconscious, when you're not aware, or even if you are aware, but most people aren't, when you're not aware, what happens is, what do you do with all this cosmic litter? What do you do with all this other stuff that you really weren't focused on? And sometimes that interrupts with all these different dreams. Now, the idea here is, prior to going to sleep at night, and your collective consciousness of, it could be the days, it could be moments, it could be lifetimes, you know, what's in that subconscious, we really don't know. But it's a great time to clean house, to re-engineer your subconscious, to basically direct the inner structure of whom and what it is that you want to know so that it can be beneficial for the next day, the day after, the day after that. What Edgar Casey used to do was take all his notebooks or whatever knowledge he needed, especially through school, and he used to put the book underneath his pillow. He used to sleep with the books and not even have to study, and the information used to just come right into his head. Well, the same thing happens. The same thing happens to us, but we don't know that we're collecting the information. He's aware of it. He's seeking that. So now when we're going into these states of sleep and dream, what we want to do is welcome the subconscious into areas where you could say, what's going to be, give me the most beneficial thought for the day. I mean, I'm saying it very genetically because I don't know generically. I don't know how to say it, but you would go into the subconscious and design what it is that you're seeking. You might want to even say something, my increasing mental facilities are for serving humanity better, or things of this nature, or even attempt. Like I said, who knew where he really went, you know, the Hall of Records, this or that, but he was down, he was out. But the same thing happens to us in the sleep. So if you're having uncomfortable dreams, sometimes people say, you know, write down your dreams. And I remember I did that for years when I was way younger, you know, and you never really get good sleep doing that. You can wake up after each dream, and you can shorten that by saying, I will remember my dreams, or in my dreams I would like the answer to, you know, or in my subconscious I'm ready to add information to. I'm ready to re-engineer is the word I keep saying, but I'm ready to discover my subconscious. And in cases, Leo, where individuals crossed my path that had experience of alien.
Maybe this is it, but I look forward to going to bed. I look forward to going to sleep. Okay, it's very easy for me to go to sleep, and at night, and I'm rather anxious for it because I know that as soon as I go to sleep, I'm not here anymore. You know, it's like I'm looking forward to the nightly trip wherever it takes me. And there's been a number of times in my life that I've worked nights or something like that, but. I look forward. I literally do look forward to sleep because it's a restful period most of the time, and it recharges my batteries. But it I feel like, especially in the last
burning number, out sleep.
I feel like
as you about it,
I'm somewhere else. You know, I'm somewhere else, and it's that's always nice. But anyway, go on. I'm sorry. You know, I wanted to mention, I do have a caller. I think it's Rod from Texas. Would you like to say a few words to him? Or?
Sure, put him
on.
Remember
Rod?
Yes.
That? Yeah, hang on one second. He's been on for a little while. Hang on. Hey, Rod, are you with us? Hello,
well,
Rod.
I'm with you. I was just calling to listen in on the program because Google doesn't let me listen to it on the computer tonight.
Oh, really?
They don't let me listen to the live show. I can go into the archives, but they won't let me listen to the live show all the time.
That's unusual. That I'm finding that to be a problem with live listeners. They're having problems trying to put in, so they do call or they listen to the archive show, but I don't know why it's a problem like that. You know, I don't know if you can go. If you go on my website, and you can try it from there. You don't have to go to Blog Talk. There's a speaker section right on on the top corner of hand corner of my website, lasteelshow.org, and you'll see it. And that will play it instead of it plays the audio without the visual thing. You know. Without the net, it'll play the live show. You might be able to get it there if you went to Internet Explorer or Google, you know, any of them, Yahoo, any search engine will bring that up. But
it's nice to hear that you're calling to listen in again.
Yeah.
How are you feeling tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm glad that I called in. I've been a follower of Edgar Casey since I was a child. My grandfather was very much aware of him and turned me on to him. And I'm 70 years old, so I've been watching him for a good long time.
Is there any one particular experience that you heard of that Edgar Casey did that turns you on to it more than another? Like, mine was the fact, like, where did he go when he went under? You know, that was really what pulled me into it more. And again, I was a young girl, too. I was only in seventh grade at the time. They called it junior high school. No more middle schools then. So was there one particular experience about Casey that, or just all of it, I guess? I know you said your grandfather, but can you share a story with us?
My grandfather was a hands-on healer at one time in his life and a student of occult learning. And he passed on a lot of stuff. Edgar Casey was one that he spoke of often. And the Masters of the Far East was the others that he was particularly impressed with and wanted us to know about.
That's the one that, Leo, I suggested that people buy the 5-set, The Masters of the Far East by Bard Spaulding.
Yes, I think my grandfather had the opportunity to meet him.
How wonderful that.
Doing his tours in Chicago.
Wow.
But,
now, Dad was a healer. As a child growing up and seeing your father as a healer, you knew you had that lineage in you as well and you needed to participate in it?
No. As a matter of fact, his healing activities... he kind of kept to himself, except one time I had an experience where I guess I was about 10 or 11. I stepped on a block of wood that had a nail.
Ouch.
Sticking through it, and it came all the way through my sneaker and out the top of my foot. And he gave me a treatment, and the next day the puncture was gone.
Wow.
Beautiful news. I say beautiful because there's a lot of beauty in healing, but only those who experience it or hope to experience it could really appreciate what you just shared with us, what the mind, what the healing, what self-hypnosis, what faith, or whatever it is that you want to call it. When it manifests and you have that experience, it's very hard to let go of. You don't want to let go of it, like you appreciate sleep there, Leah. And I
it's true. I had
so the puncture wound was gone and it was healed.
Yes, but I didn't think anything of it or even remember it for years until I had the opportunity to have a healing from some people who were trained at the Edgar Casey Institute.
Right, the ARE.
Yes. And where they go into a trance, and psychic surgeons, I guess they were called. And the guy who worked on me had a heavy German accent when he was in trance. But on the table where he worked on me, he would hold out his hands and ask for surgical instruments. And you could hear the instrument being slapped into his hand. But you couldn't see an instrument. And this was back in right around 1972, I guess.
Yeah, that's what we called psychic healings. You know,
and,
the mind control aspect of it, too, from Silver Mind Control. That's how they taught to help heal, too. Is just close your eyes and put your hand up and allow the higher knowers, the ancestors, to help guide us through what type of healing is needed. And Edgar Casey, in one case, told a surgeon, this one person broke their knee, And the surgeon had said, or the doctor, I guess, at the time, said this child or this person would never walk again. And Edgar Casey went into the trance and whatnot and told the surgeon, in medical terms, he had to put a nail through the kneecap of that individual, and it would hold it all together. And sure enough, they followed that information from Edgar Casey while he was in his sleep state, or hypnotic state, or whatever you want to call it, and the knee was healed. The person was able to walk again. And who would want to put a nail in anything at that day, in that time and day, without x-rays? He had the x-ray eyes. And I'm certain what you are experiencing, what you know, that within your own knowing, I must have chose Edgar Casey to speak this week, because I'm honored that you called back and you like Edgar Casey. And that's probably maybe what I was talking about, a book, and maybe it was Grandpa over here, or your father, or your grandpa, saying, you know, talk about your Edgar Casey book. You know, it could have been as simple as that, because we're speaking about him now. And I'm just watching the energies unfold that way. What do you think of that, Leo? Not only that, the life and teachings of the Far East.
It was of his prophecy about about Egypt, and supposedly the findings under the paw of the Sphinx. There's a whole underground thing.
Full record.
It will be discovered in 1999. Now, there was some, I remember some recollection, some announcement of something or other, but back in 1999 or so, that they found this Hall of Records under the Sphinx. However, they didn't. The curator
mm-hmm.
refused to open it up to open it up. Because he said that it would violate all kinds of laws and everything else, but that he wouldn't, and that it may change the world, and he didn't want that to happen. So
that was a WASI, and the reason he wouldn't open it up is because the information that would be found there would prove that the current Egyptians are not the builders of the pyramids, and he couldn't risk that.
Oh, okay, that's what it was. All right, okay.
I think it was Hancock wrote extensively about it when they kicked him out of Egypt.
Okay. Because I knew that was about that time. That was in the 90s when that happened, and there was no more talk about it after that. But then, of course, Egypt went into turmoil. This is the last 10, Mubarak lost power, and now everything is changing over there. So you got to wonder if that information is going to eventually come out, or if it's already been destroyed.
Well, the information is available through the blood knowledge of the Egyptian people.
Right.
Some of them, their ancestors date back to that time.
Well,
they have access to it in a dream state.
Yeah. And also the Sumerians.
Aware of it, though, Leo. You hear what he's saying? They got access to it in a dream state because they were knowers, and some of that information that was in there was basically also Atlantean, supposedly Atlantean, the knowledge of the universe, not just even our galaxy, but other galaxies as well. And they said some of the survivors of the Atlantean,
You know what's fascinating is this, I meant to mention this book, this series of books that, and this pyramid that they found, or not the pyramid, but the Sphinx they found in Romania, okay, which is over 50,000 years old, and is similar to the Sphinx in Egypt. But underneath, they found these three tunnels, but they found these incredible archives, all right, that holographic archives that date back 50,000 years or more, and the beginning of Egypt, and it shows it's tremendous. So what this is really what these books have talked about, but I think that possibly what's underneath the Sphinx itself, the Egyptian Sphinx, is probably what is underneath the It was underneath the Romanian Sphinx, okay, because the tunnel led to Egypt. One tunnel led to one major tunnel led to Egypt. One led to Iraq, and one led to Tibet, okay, through this tunnel in Romania, these huge tunnels, these vast tunnels that were to those three locations. And
probably when the giants walked the earth at that time.
Possibly, yeah. Well, the Anunnaki were 20 feet tall or more, you know. You know, so it could have been them. It was definitely aliens, an alien race that created that. So
it was the Nephilim, the sons and daughters of aliens with humans.
Yeah.
The gods mating with humans.
Right, right. Either the Nephilim or the Anunnaki or, you know, whatever they were. But that, but they left this record that they found and is known now. I mean, it's that exists and is being scrutinized now by the United States government and the Romanian government, and some fascinating things going on. But we're at that. I think we're at that stage now where all these discoveries are supposed to happen. All this stuff is supposed to be. It's been prophesized for millennia. That, you know, these are the times when everything. In fact, you know, the apocalypse is called. What the apocalypse is the, it's called. It's Greek for the unfolding, the unwrapping, the unfolding.
That which is hidden. So when you're saying unfolding,
yeah.
It means that which was hidden. Like when someone uses
exactly.
the word.
Now it's. Oh yeah, it's true. It's that's what these times are. And they're phenomenal. And I'm excited every day when I read more stuff, or even when I talk to you, or you know, and I see more and more and more information coming out that is available.
Validated.
People.
It's
yeah,
actually
you know.
Validates a lot, and this idea of. Like we built the Sphinx and we built the, and I'm sure maybe humans helped the aliens or the greater beings
right.
or the,
right, yeah,
the other prophets in life and that, things of that nature. If you take the idea of the monument of the Sphinx that was buried all the way up to its neck in sand, and then there was that story that wasn't true that some pharaoh sat in front of it and said, "Undig me," but that wasn't really a true story. That was a falsehood. But at any rate. What I'm getting at is that the symbology of the Sphinx is not only found on our planet or monuments, that they're actually found all over our continent, our planet, but even on outer planets. Just the idea of the very first image that Tesla got back with his radio waves pointing toward Mars was the image of the face, the world known Face on Mars, a photograph. And he got this radio wave. This was Tesla saying that people from other worlds or beings from other worlds were contacting him and telling him how to show this, what was it, direct current that he created? One of the other was direct or alternate. But he actually took the philosophy and showed the science of it. That's besides the ancient Greek ones that were Egyptians that were in Alexander at the time and all that work. We could talk about that another time because it's just.
Well, I think his whole thing was Orgon energy, I believe, which was, you know, tremendous. But, you know, that got kind of snuffed out when they found out they couldn't make any money at it. Yeah, that's why. I guess J.P. Morgan was told that he bought out the patent or something from Tesla,
It was all of them at the same time. Marconi. It was a collective consciousness of super minds and super beings all at the same time, drinking from that collective consciousness called electricity. And it was really a fight amongst themselves. What one doesn't even know what the other one was doing until they wanted to make money from it, you know. But thing was. There was Marconi, there was Tesla, there was Edison, there was Westinghouse, there was J.P. Morgan, and several others, but I don't recall them.
J.P. Morgan was financing all these guys until he saw what Tesla had, and Tesla was able to create a energy basically out of nothing. I mean, it would have been free energy for the world.
But nobody's going to make money that way.
But the guy, with these panels, nobody could make any money. But so, and J.P. Morgan wanted, you know, his whole thing was oil and gas and, you know, financing, Henry Ford and, you know, all the other guys, General Motors and all the other car makers, and the oil companies all together got together, and that's what we have, the mess today we have. But
I wanted to get back to the Sphinx for a moment, because our friend was saying is that, you know, the new work that you saw and whatnot, they're going to find more monuments like Sphinx faces and things like that under the earth, under the sea, under the water, in Central America, all over the planet, and aside from our planet, the monuments and leftovers, let's say, from other civilizations that when that particular planet was alive, or maybe they're you know, subterranean, they may live deep inside the planet instead of on the outside. But at any rate, I don't think it's the only Sphinx. I think it's the largest one. And I don't really know if the Egyptians actually built the Sphinx or participated in something. It's as if there was something that they marveled at and they had to build it. They had to face it a certain way. And you're going to see these different monuments start cropping up, because you were saying, they said in 1998, we're going to see new land masses, these changes are going to happen. Well, I think they are changing, but it's subtle. I was thinking about what Billy had told us about the waters overlapping. It's subtle in a way that, you know, scuba divers are now finding, you know, great artifacts, giant heads, and all of these things. When they talked about lands would show themselves, maybe in our minds, show themselves would be, okay, look, we see it, it's up out of the water. But showing itself could be some deep-sea diver going down and finding it as well. So I think these mysteries...
Well, the technology is there now that we can just do anything and go anywhere. And that's... And instantaneously put it out so millions and millions of people can see it. They throw it up on a website, or throw it on Facebook or something, you know, a social network. I mean, look at all the stuff that's going viral today. I mean, you know, people are, you know, kissing their dog, and it suddenly gets, you know, a million people see it on YouTube or something. And it's like, but the information is so available, you know, everywhere. It's like never, ever, ever before. And
you have to be careful what information or what sign you can actually literally trust in this day and age.
Yeah, you have to become a not only a funnel.
Be aware of what you're seeking.
But, yeah, you got to be a colander, you know, for all this stuff, you know, to sift it through, because there's just so much out there and so much inundated with it. Because I do the radio shows and I do and keep my blog postings and website up and articles and whatnot. There's so much information that I have to diffuse from, you know, every day, that and read and evaluate, that I just get overwhelmed, you know, and sometimes overwhelmed by it all. And just become, say, okay, there's so much. How could anybody, 100 years ago, hell, even 20 years ago, I can remember before the Internet, you know what I mean? I remember doing everything without the Internet, you know what I mean?
I know.
And, I mean, God almighty, you know, if you wanted to read anything, you had to get three or four different papers, you had to get newspapers, you had to go to a library, you know, maybe watch television, but it's like to get any real news or any information on any subject, it took a lot of work and effort. Now you just you know, go to Google and put up whatever it is you want to talk about, you know, and you can get any kind of information available. It's just overwhelming, Maria. It just overwhelms me that I can have access to that kind of information, and yet the responsibility is there to try to filter it out so that you know you
You can imagine how our ancestors felt with knowing, truly knowing the secrets of what they understood truth to be, the things, the gods in their minds that fell out of the sky to guide and direct them,
right.
Things of nature. So,
but
that internet stuff, without all of that addiction to electronic discoveries, without all of that, these individuals lived and worshipped and cherished, and they had the universe to look at and study and things like that. They didn't have any kind of little electronic device sitting in their hands, except for the aliens that knew how to use the tools when they came in with these electronic tools, let's say.
Yeah, and I think back in the day when prior to telecommunications of any sort, there was a lot of telepathy. You know,
there was a lot of
telepathy. I think people were connected in ways that they were, because that was the only way they could connect. You know what I mean?
People were using their own Wi-Fi.
That's right. That was real Fi instead of Wi-Fi, I guess. But you know, I don't know. I remember those back. I remember for years and years and years. I mean, where the You know, as a kid, for some reason, you didn't think, you know, you felt confident that, you know, you didn't have to call mom every 5 minutes on a cell phone, or your mother didn't have to call you every 5 minutes. You know, you just went out and you did your thing and you were gone for whatever the rest of the day is, and you came home and said, how was your day? You know?
Right.
Now everybody's on these phones and doing all these things. They have to be connected every second of the day to something.
Just think of the miracle that you could have a particular thought, one thought, and that you could share it with the world in an instant. I mean, think about that. People say, how is oneness? What is all that?
It knocks me out. Totally knocks me out. You know, to think that when I, like every day when I put something new on my site, yeah, maybe 300, 400, 500, 600, sometimes as many as 1,000 people on one day will read or see that picture or read that article or watch that video or listen to the show. You know, and it's like, well, you know, okay, it's amazing. It's just amazing that, you know, we have access to that many people. You know, back in the old days, what did you have? I mean, how did you act before telephone or anything? How did they communicate? You know, they didn't. They had to, it was very difficult. So they had to send a messenger somewhere with a verbal message. You know, it was like, holy cow.
I just got vision of like the prairie woman ringing the big bell outside that it's time to come home for dinner, you know, or the school bell.
Yeah. Right,
ringing
the
bell. It was still sound. It was still brought things together. You know, we can have sound that we can hear. We can have sound that we can hear and clear audience and all of those things. And now we have the visuals to go behind it. I mean, especially with these new phones and things. But that's it. They did it with loud sounds. They had to wake people up, and I believe that the DNA structures and the let's say the superhuman beings that awoke, or let's say modified perhaps the DNA structures that humanity carries to bring it and enhance the new journey or the new fifth world or fifth cycle of our planet, you know, coming out of the fourth, going into the fifth root race. It's like the fifth day.
Right.
So,
right.
But these numbers, these times, that's where we're at, Leo. And if you go over a lot of these prophets and ancient knowers, these geniuses of the past, and in fact even the geniuses of now, the idea of this trans-dimensional travel, trans-dimensional design or gateway or any label you want to put on it, that transformed society. That same word came up in Casey's reading, that word trans. So everything's going to be passing through something else. That's what trans means, you know, even itself, you know, but this transforming society, trans-dimensional travel. He traveled out of his body. He took what he knew as healing aspects and transformed a society while he was in his generation. He was the collective consciousness for his generation at his time. Same thing with Nostradamus. It was basically more, even that he went into the hundreds, what was he, 1500s, right? There was Nostradamus. Edgar Cayce is more, 1930s, 1929, things of that nature,
right,
where he started to record everything.
Yeah, even into the 60s, didn't he? He lived into the 60s, didn't he? 1960s.
I don't know when he passed away.
I think it was in the 60s, yeah. But, I think 63 or 60-something.
I mean, he had a hospital in Virginia Beach, or it might have been the town that he lived in, that he grew up in. But he had moved at one, and no, it was Virginia, I think. But he built it, and then the crash happened. and you would think, oh, here's the psychic. See, I understand this, and here he built this hospital for healing, to get all the readings to heal these people and all that. But the hospital failed because there was no economic finances at the time. But then later on, what happens now, we have the ARE, we have the whole institute right there with all of his 14,000 plus readings and directions from the Hall of Records back to the Sphinx again, and God knows it's like finding the Dead Sea Scrolls, find work from the Gnostics and all these great beings that had great knowledge hid so many things. Why are so many things being hidden? So this is the generations now, I think, when they say the end times and the new times.
Well,
I don't think anything's going to be able to be hidden anymore. I think that's really what it is.
No
more hiding.
The reason they hid stuff like that anything of any truth, was because the Catholics were out there chopping people heads off and roasting them on the fires and, for heresy. And, other crazy bastards, religions were out there, chopping people's heads off and whatnot. So it's like, what you got is you had a religion. All religions were based on fear, and so in compliance and obedience to the not so much to God, but to the Pope, or to whoever the king was or whatever. And
I hear everything you're saying. I was thinking more on the level.
Exactly. That was out the window. That had nothing to do. That's why anything of any high intelligence or higher dimensional.
I don't think we're ready. We're not ready to know the truth yet. Aside from who had.
Even Christianity, even early Christians, hid all that information, and they supposedly the Gospels were all memorized, and spoken only verbally.
They decided what Bible, but you got to go back to what's called the Apocryphal texts, the texts that were written before what was decided was going to be in the Bible and not in the Bible. So there are many truths you can find in the world religions that speak of, beings or perhaps UFO aliens or gods or things of that nature. But if you take just the study of the ancient works, this is the time period now where this root race or the new beings or the hybrids, whatever you want to call our advanced society, is heading toward. So one of the ways to do this, put into your subconscious that you take everything collectively, whatever it is that you have, and you want to use it to serve humanity better. And I think that's a very safe thought. You might want to ask a question for personal gain. You may or may not get an answer for that. But my personal gain, or if you want to even call it that, the gain is that if you're enhancing humanity and whatever it is that you understand and you share that gift or that knowing, the knowledge is the real liberation of all of it, and you become more familiar, you begin to control the aspects and the life that's around you, control particular thoughts that might be detrimental to your journey or the individuals around you.
Well,
we can't have the government do that anymore. We have to be who we are and allow all of this to come up,
But
a little leftover hippie-ish stuff there.
But you mentioned this in one of the earlier shows we did, and on this topic, and it was you talked about karmic, cosmic karma, all right?
Yes.
Or cosmic aspects, assets, I should say.
Right. Where the bank account is good energy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's what it's all about, Maria. I don't know, but as I get older and get a little more, maybe wiser. More involved with understanding myself and others, that's kind of like what it amounts to. It's like, you know, everything you do on Earth is either adding to or detracting from your cosmic bank account, if you will, and everything that you and all the good that you do in the world, whatever it is. Whatever it is, it doesn't have to be, being a saint. All it means is just doing good to somebody or something, and creating something that might go beyond you or explain you or inspire somebody else. You know, that's the best thing you can do in the world. Inspire.
The thing is, having the information and the knowledge about it. I mean, you can get somebody could give you a new car. And it could be loaded with all the new mechanisms it needs. And then you get in the car and they hand you like 17, 18 keys. And they say, okay, one of these will make this thing work. You know, so
different
disciplines. Which one's going to make it work? Is it this thought? Is it that thought? So you can have all those things, Liam. But the idea is we need to know what key goes where to make this vehicle move. So that, I think, is a great pleasure and an honor to be able to speak on radio like this about these particular situations, you know.
It's
just like, give me the right key or show me where the key goes, and now we have keyless cars, you know, you just push a button and it starts. Were gone and all flat screens were in, you know.
But you gotta remember the security code, though, that's the problem. But but anyway, it's showtime is just about up here. It's 9 o'clock. But I wanted to thank you again, and Rod, I see you're still with us. Thank you for joining us tonight. And,
Jerry,
I'm glad I called in. I wanted to ask Maria, since she's worked with so many of the prophets, if she's tried the Hopi.
The Chiquina dolls. I understand their philosophy. I have studied some of their work, and if you ask me if I've tried, I don't know what you mean by try, but have I indulged in their wisdom and their knowledge and their Hopi predictions? Yes, I have. Do I have an answer? The answer is the great truths that are happening will show themselves, and it doesn't matter if it comes through the Hopi or if it comes to Edgar Casey or the lady in the supermarket talking next door to you, when and if and as we go through, let me say that, not if, as we go through this transition, all the great prophets, the great knowers, all that we need to enhance our journey on this planet at this time is the faith and the knowing of what you understand that truth to be. And then we could go into psychotronics and things like that, into the whole, the areas of the first, let's say, Nikola Tesla's followers. But psychotronics is another whole arena. We haven't even, that's taking all of this energy that we're speaking about, our atoms spinning faster and everything, and putting it right into radionics. So, and it's not just to learn how to douse, by the way. I was involved with these. For a long time, and that radionics is another whole issue with orgone energy too, as well. I did a study with the Palmer Institute, and they had an orb with orgone energy in it, and they wanted to see me do some like Tesla type stuff. I was involved in a lot of unusual experiments because
why don't we say that for next week's show? Because that'd be fascinating.
Ignite. But I
because
forgot.
Most of those were all designed, you know, to raise consciousness, you know, or to, you know, divine something through you, through a higher vibration, and that's what you do. so well. And I thank you for enlightening our listeners here, you know, this series. But maybe we could talk a little bit about that next week. Would that be possible?
Sure.
That would be really interesting, I think, you know, to move on with that thought. And but anyway.
We can do that. Thank you again, Rob, for joining us, too. Thank you again, Leo.
Welcome. Thank you for being there.
You're welcome. You too. That's
thank
a ditto.
You too, Leo.
Okay. Good night, Rod. Have a good one. And
good
we'll talk to you next week. Okay. And Maria, again, next week, it looks good.
Yes, it
does. Okay.
Yeah, I blocked out all the Thursdays. I couldn't.
Okay. All right.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thanks so much for being on, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. We'll talk to you this week. All right.
Thanks.
And I want to thank everybody for joining me, and special thanks again to Maria Pixel-Giri. And, oh, by the way, did you want them to contact you by email if anybody has an interest in a psychic reading?
I think the my text number would be better. I have it ready next week.
Okay.
I'm actually putting in a new line just for New York, a phone line for reading.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You're in Connecticut, but I have a few different numbers I could use now, so we'll talk about that during the week.
Okay. All right.
I'm ready to, but not on these phones yet, not on these numbers yet.
Okay. That's fine.
Okay.
But anyway. Thank you again so much, and as always, you know, you did a bang-up job, and I love talking to you all the time. And,
thanks for the opportunity,
right.
And we share. Everybody have a good night's sleep. Take care, Leo. Good night, Rob.
Bye-bye. And that was Maria Pixel-Giri, and she will be with us next week. And in the meantime, join Lila and I next Tuesday and Wednesday. And good night, everyone.